Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our awesome guest is Anna Jacobson, a customer success leader and head of customer success at You Can Book Me, and we're going to talk about surprise customer success. This episode is brought to you by the new season of Wireframe, a podcast by Adobe about how UX can help technology fit into our lives. Whether you're a designer or simply design curious, you'll learn how design intersects with the current world changes and hear from major leaders in the design and technology industries. To check out the show, just search for Wireframe in your favorite podcast app. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Jane. It's great to be here.
We're so excited to dive into this topic. But before that, let us know what's your background story. How did you get started? And how did you end up being a customer success champion at such a great company?
Customer success is something that people hear about a lot. And it's actually super new as a discipline. I think it might be newer than some of these more disciplined focuses of UI, UX even. And for me, I had the benefit of exploring what it meant to do customer success really early in the beginning of this discipline. I didn't know what it was, frankly, in 2005. I started learning about it, I would say, about 6 years ago. And at the time, I was really more focused on marketing. I was really interested in conversion marketing in particular. And I was leading the efforts at an agency on conversion marketing. And in that time, I was working with a guy named Rob Walling, who some people may be familiar with. And I was working with him really just kind of picking his brain as someone who I had attended MicroConf and really looked to him as somebody who had been really tapped into this concept of what conversion marketing really meant, especially at smaller scale SaaS companies, bootstrap SaaS companies. As he and I started talking about this more, I learned about what he was doing with Drip. And he said, "Hey, what do you think about joining the team?" Very early on, I think I was the first non-technical hire at Drip. And very soon that role at Drip moved from more general marketing stuff and more into this very more specific discipline that still at that time was very new of what customer success was. And something I've really enjoyed hearing him reflect on is how instrumental it was to make that early decision for customer success at Drip, and how you'll see this more often in startups that one of the very early decisions they'll make is about how to do customer success really well. And so fast forward a few years, I'm now at You Can Book Me. I have the joy of working with a team across multiple continents, customers across the world, and have been able to deepen my knowledge about what customer success means in the scale sense, in the enterprise sense, and how people can do this even if they don't have a ton of resources. So that's a little bit about my background. It's just been a fun journey.
So what does your everyday work look like at your current place, You Can Book Me? Do you have a team? Do you dive into customer conversations yourself on a daily basis? How does it work?
For me, I am very much more looking over a broader team. So I have a team that is focused on customer success directly, but I also am looking at the side of support as well and sales. We're a tiny team that does big things. And so if you look at our About Us page on the You Can Book Me website, you'll see, you know, our headcount of the company isn't massive, but we have over 18,000 customers. And so we have to think really creatively about, as a bootstrapped company, how do we leverage ourselves in the most scaled way? And that means that we have what's known as a customer team, and we have a product team, and we have an engineering team. And what you're not hearing is, oh, they have a sales team, or they have a support team, or they have a success team. And within the customer team, we do have specificity in terms of responsibilities, but there is still this understanding that it's an all-hands-on-deck approach. So we live in this tension of a bit of a hybrid space where, you know, somebody who's doing support at some point may be doing a little bit of success while they primarily are doing support, Occasionally, they might even be having a sales conversation. And the focus for us has really been, how do we allow for specificity, specialization, deep domain knowledge, while still keeping people engaged at a broad level that allows us to be a tiny company that does big things. So for me, yeah, I do have customer calls. I am much more often involved in the sales conversations. I have the benefit of being able to rely on my dedicated success managers for the accounts that have, we would call them account managed accounts. And I think you're thinking at this point, oh, 18,000 customers, are they all account managed? Well, as a freemium product, we actually have quite a few more users than we have those 18,000 customers. And we have even, I would say, if you look at our pricing model, we've got our small scale users that we can't necessarily justify the deep, high touch account managed approach, more of a tech touch approach for success for those. And then we have our enterprise customers, which some people are really surprised by. But we do have these customers that are paying us quite a bit of money each month. And that's where we really focus the dedicated success conversations. And those are more left to the success managers. But my role on a daily basis really does touch on a lot of these points. Hopefully, on the best days, being able to kind of lead the strategy and make sure our strategy is in place for success. And also keeping an eye and a pulse check on how we're doing in support and if the success principles that are so core to our expansion and retention efforts are being just really championed in that arena as well. And so it kind of comes together when you look at our success organization, you see these silos of support, success, and sales, but they all work together in concert and hopefully produce an experience for the customer that really drives them toward exactly what they need from You Can Book Me, whether they're coming to us on the free side, where we're getting more of an interaction in our forum, whether they're coming to us at, you know, the $10 a month side, where they are getting support from us, but we're not necessarily doing a lot of in-depth work with them on strategy, or whether it's the enterprise side, where we're doing a lot more engagement on a regular basis throughout their life cycle with us.
Thanks so much for clarifying. I'm glad that you brought up that definition of a customer team that does a lot of things at once. So let us talk about the definition of customer success per se, and how is that different from customer support? Because there are a lot of founders and product people listening to us. Everybody does support. Not everybody does success. So that sounds like something more proactive. So in your opinion, what's the difference?
You're absolutely right on that, Jane. It's a big difference, I think, in the simplest way of describing it is reactive versus proactive. And every successful SaaS company that's got paying customers, you got to think about how you're going to handle support. And there's a lot of different ways of doing it. And there's some innovations these days, you know, whether it's chatbots or whether it's email. Ultimately, what's happening is the customer's coming to you or the user's coming to you and they're asking for help. And that's a very standard format for what we would call reactive. Even if you're thinking about a forum, that would be reactive. That would be someone who's coming in asking for help and you're assisting and you're meeting that need. And that's definitely the hallmark of support. And it's true that getting support right is certainly a top order priority. Even, you know, before you think about many other things on the customer side, making sure you have support dialed in a way that's working for your customer and working for you is something you want to get out of the way first. And that's a lot of times, especially in the smaller sense, if you're limited in terms of your resources in your company of who can speak to whom, that may be where it ends, is really just focusing on getting those support fundamentals dialed in. But if you're thinking about adding in more of a success element for your customers, that's where you start thinking about anything that's proactive. And the traditional models that you hear at some of these bigger companies that they'll have dedicated success managers. And I think that's the most sophisticated model for customer success. But there's actually a number of different flavors you can do this. And I think you heard me mention tech touch. One very common way for these smaller scale companies who might just have a founder and a few engineers is that they will have automated emails that are going out at certain times based on certain triggers, understanding the customer journey and saying, I think this might be happening for you. I'm going to reach out and make sure you get to that aha moment. That actually is part of customer success. And so I think when you think about, oh, I could have this sophisticated success team, that's certainly one way of doing it. But without even knowing it, you may already be doing success right now through some of that proactive automation.
That's so nice that you brought it up, because I am a co-founder of UserList, which is exactly what we do, what you couldn't describe better, really. So a minute of fame for us here. And yeah, that's a great bridge between high-touch customer success and just zero-touch of a basic support model. Glad that you brought that up. Are there any procedures that you think a small company should have in place to establish that proactive element into their customer relationship, starting from very small everyday things to something that requires human resources?
Sure. Well, you heard me mention this a little bit about the customer journey. And I think that so many people who are starting out and thinking about how to make their customers really profitable and stick around have at least given some thought to a customer journey. And this is something that I couldn't emphasize enough, that having a dedicated session where you spend a few hours mapping this out, doing some deep thinking, and maybe even studying some of the customers that have been paying you the most money and what actions they took to get there, making some kind of standardized understanding of that can really help you build, even at the lowest investment of your personal attention, a scaled out model, tech touch model for customer success, maybe using something like UserList. And so that's really important. But I think that it's also easy to stop there. It's easy to stop at, I got my sequence going out proactively. And that's certainly acceptable in some cases. But if you're looking to really think ahead to the future and build a foundation that could pay off if you ever think you might be hiring a dedicated success person on your team, or if you're thinking to the future and thinking, there's a lot of insight that I might want to make sure I'm staying in touch and close to the customer. How do I make sure I build that process in for me as a founder? That's not something you're necessarily getting from your proactive tech touch style of customer success. So how do you do that in a way that's sustainable, especially if you don't have the resources at this minute to have a dedicated hire doing these calls, building a relationship with your accounts? And I would say that you can pick just one. You can pick just two customers that you have committed to, say, even calling yourself in your mind, their success manager, their account manager, the ones that you expect, if you lost this customer, that it would be catastrophic for your company, for your SaaS product. There's a number of ways of selecting this, but ultimately, whatever you select, it doesn't have to be all of your highest value customers. It can be just one. It can just be just two. And your selection is actually this discipline that is reflected throughout any customer success model you might look at, which is called segmentation. Down the road, if you do hire a customer success manager, you will still have to decide which segment of users they will be speaking with, which segment of users they will be focusing their attention on. As you hire maybe a couple more, then you'll have to decide, you know, which parts of the world are these customers living in and how are they assigned and which value should I be throwing this attention at. But at the smallest scale, you can start with just one. And the process that you develop with that one single customer could be this and can be and should be this foundation for your future customer success organization and process. And some of the things that I would really focus on would be, one, making sure that you're building and maintaining a relationship. And this is something that you'll hear anybody who's talking about customer success say, that the most valuable thing you can get from a customer is their insight about what they're actually doing and working on and the pain that they're experiencing right now. And you can't do that for all of your customers, but if you can stay in touch with just one, that's really going to pay dividends in the long term. And what do you do with that information? I think that's also really important. You may not have a sophisticated CRM, but even if you're using Notion or Confluence or someplace, having a dedicated space where you're keeping track of all the conversations you're having with this customer. And I would also say that setting expectations for that customer is important as well, because I think a lot of times customers will come in to a product and expect it will be a low touch engagement. And so part of your selection for who this customer will be that you focus on would be that they're interested in having this regular relationship with you talking about their usage. And so it really works well, especially if you've got somebody at the highest volume use and who really would perceive themselves as being able to benefit from you as bringing this consultative conversational approach to the relationship. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to go back a few sentences and call out episode 75 from 2017. Oh my God, that we had here about UX research panels when you talk to a small loyal segment of your audience. And what you said really resembles me of that, but for customer success purpose. So you kind of build your little champion base that you talk to, not at scale, but in person.
Oh, that's so interesting, because the discipline does cross over into these other areas that really strengthen your product. And you're thinking about it on one side from research, and that's such a huge benefit. At least for you, can book me. One thing that we really are excited about is when the conversations that our success managers are having become useful to developing the product. That's really exciting to us. And so you can kind of see it from both sides, this two-pronged approach where you're getting something out of this conversation. You're not just getting this relationship that's strong, hopefully then resulting in expansion and retention, but also insight about their usage that can help you understand more about this research side about how the product's being used. And then the other prong is that this is being useful to the customer, that they're seeing this as being really valuable and meaningful to them. And one thing I have to say on that is there is this standardized approach in customer success, something called a QBR, a quarterly business review. And oftentimes this is being used in more of an enterprise context. The hallmark of this is that you at some point have understood what the KPIs, the key performance indicators, are for your customer, and that you're going back to them on a regular cadence and saying, hey, this is how we're helping you meet these KPIs. We are proving your value. And I wish I could remember who said this. I think I might have heard it at MicroConf, frankly, is this quote of, a customer is only successful if they know that's your product that's driving their success. And you may have some scaled up ways of doing this. Maybe you have some activity reports that are going out to all your customers. But if you have this strong relationship with your most important customer, your most insightful customer, that is something that you can convey on a very personal way back to them. If these are the conversations we're having about how this journey has been for you, what you told me your goals were, and how we're getting closer to them together. And as you listen to this, you kind of can hear the flavor of what a consultant may have really practiced with their clients, you know, and thinking about your customers that you're working with, if you've chosen just that one, thinking about that one customer as the one client that your product has, and you are now the consultant for that client, can be a really helpful way of framing that kind of conversation. But a little bit about expectation setting, this really only works if the customer is on board and willing to commit to that kind of cadence with you. And it's much easier to set these expectations in the onboarding phase when they're first being introduced to your product and to say, hey, you know, this is the thing that we're planning to do with you throughout the life cycle of your use. Maybe they've finished adoption and you're saying, hey, next quarter, I'm going to be sending you a report and I'd love to have a conversation with you about how things are going and the interactions you've had with our company and how you're hitting your goals. And setting that expectation really helps with them actually showing up on the meeting that you're going to be setting up with them. Obviously, sending this email is one thing, but having that face-to-face conversation is where the real meat comes together. That can be really useful for you in the long term and useful for solidifying that relationship.
I can tell you a lot of companies are doing it in the wrong way. The latest example I faced was at Upwork. And they do honestly try to help you get the most out of their product, but they have these like automated bot people who will get in touch with you like, I don't know, like 5 times during the first month. And like, I don't necessarily want, you know, I came there for some VA service. I don't really need a customer success manager right away. So establishing a first, you know, touch point of other on board with the idea of talking to someone is probably very important.
Oh man, I think I've also faced that mismatch a couple of times in my interactions. And I think that the less money you're paying for a product, the more accepting you are of this kind of mismatch. But as you start paying more and more money, it's like, come on, guys. You know, like, are you aware of what it is that I'm looking to get from you? And why are you speaking to me this way? And the tolerance for that mismatch of what the needs are of the customer and how the company is talking about those goes way, way down the more money they're paying. So yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to touch upon the psychological moment, because what's been really painful for us sometimes is that you've settled up to do some customer success. You proactively reach out to some of your very nice accounts, and then you strike conversation, then you discover that they're not prospering at all. Like, they're actually like skipped on using your product a few months ago or things like that. Are there any ways firsthand to, you know, deal with these kind of pains? And then how can we rescue accounts? Is there even point in trying?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean, rescuing is something that is definitely possible in some cases, but it's not possible in all cases. And I think that's really important to understand, because have we not all been on the side where we know we're the customer and we know the relationship is done? We know that there's nothing that could be done that could fix this. And I think honesty is really important here. Like, if you also know from your side that you're not going to be able to deliver. You're not going to be able to sideline some of your projected roadmap priorities for what's really urgent to save this account. They got, I think that honesty has to come in at some point. So rescuing, I'm a huge fan of, but not at the cost of the trust of the customer, right? But I think also, if you are able to project that something can be done to save the account, accountability is really important in that case. To say, okay, this is what you're telling me. This is what I'm hearing. Here's what I know we can do for you. Here's how what I know we can change for you in this experience. And maybe it's simply that they are using the product in a way that could be improved. And it's no significant change on your side. It's just more of a, let's get you fit and more adopted in a way that fits your need better. And that's the best case scenario where it's like, okay, let's train you. Let's build a schedule. And that's the accountability part. Let's build a schedule where I'm going to come and speak with you or work with you to make sure that you're actually solving this problem and matching up your needs to the features in the product. Maybe it's something where you are planning to deliver and build out a feature in your roadmap that they're desperately waiting for. And in that case, the trust that they have in you to deliver that is really important. And we all know that our projected timelines for delivery may not always hold up. And that transparency is also really important to set the expectation. So here's what I am committing to, but I'm also committing to checking with you on this cadence about exactly the progress we're making here. And of course, that is a lot more feasible if we're thinking about this in the context of this, you know, very special elevated customer within your company that you've chosen to be this more of a consultative approach with. That may not be feasible for every customer who's in trouble, but I think in the lowest scale touch here on the support side, I think that's where your support team or whether you're doing support or somebody else has to be really careful about expectation setting and saying, you know, this is something that we're prioritizing that we definitely have roadmapped, but never giving an ETA. If you can't really give that timeline accountability to the customer, then I think that's a really good way of approaching it to make sure that you're not ever breaking a promise on that side either. But ultimately, what's really important here is that the customer is aware of what you're planning to do. And at any point, they're realizing that this isn't going to meet their needs, that they feel the freedom to be able to make the choice that's going to make them the most successful. And you do have to make peace with that at some point, because if you're really committed to customer success, number one, obviously, you're going to hope for expansion and retention. But at the same time, you have to embrace this concept of the customer doing whatever they need to be the most successful. And that may mean making a hard decision and then helping them gracefully make that decision if needed to make a choice for something that's actually ultimately going to meet their needs.
That was one of our early learnings at UserList. In sales conversations, we have been always happily recommending other tools because there is plenty, and we always strive for to get better fit customers and also get better fit for the leads that come in, not necessarily our product. And that's been so liberating in return and also honest.
Really, I love the word liberating there because one, it is now freeing you up to say, I ultimately am not selling a bad fit. So therefore, I'm ultimately not supporting a bad fit. And ultimately, I'm not ever breaking a promise to someone who is a bad fit. And it allows you to be so much more focused in on the target customer. And it's actually, I think what you're describing, Jane, is a fundamental part of making sure that you're doing product market fit, that you have narrowed your focus to a place, a domain that you know you can be successful in, that you can enable success for your customers. I love that.
What do you do with those accounts that are paying, not at the scale of $3 per month, but some more significant amount, but not activated at all? And what should you do? Should you like go around and cancel, try to activate them? And what's the strategy?
Well, I'll talk about the higher touch strategy on that. We do occasionally see customers where they're paying us a lot of money and we're not really seeing that they've fully adopted. Typically, what has happened with an account like that is they've been with us for some time. And we're assuming that at some point, the relationship has changed. Their relationship with our product has changed. Their needs have changed. And the number one thing that is our biggest priority in that case is we want a conversation with them. And this is coming back to this very high touch concept of if we have that phone conversation, we have such a better chance of re-engagement because we can then start asking questions about, talk to me about the different ways your company is using us. Talk to me about the different departments that are having meetings with customers or any kind of meetings at all, because you can book me as a scheduling tool. Because what we're seeing on our side, customer, is that you've got all these ways that you're not using us. And we'd love to think creatively about how we can help you start solving problems with these unused pieces of your purchase with us. Because the way we work is they're actually buying a calendar quota. And so they could actually have unused calendar connections. So that's one way they could not be using us, or they could just not be taking bookings. Either way, there's some part of this that would really scream, I need attention. I need help. I'm not using You Can Book Me. And we want to come in and figure out, oh, is it because somebody lost track of the strategy and lost the plot? Is it because that something's going wrong on your sales or success side where you're just not getting the conversations with your customers? Can we talk to you about what's going wrong there? Is it because your team has shrunk down? Maybe COVID affected you in a pretty dramatic way and you changed course. And so what you're seeing now is that you're focusing more on outbound sales and less on success. So those conversations are critical to help us understand what changed and what might have gone wrong and what they had anticipated they're using us to be and what they actually were using us to be. And that oftentimes happens, Jane, when we see an account, like I said, has been with us for quite some time and actually might have predated our formal success efforts. So they actually might not be familiar with their success manager at all. So it's a really good chance to get engaged and say, hey, hello, here we are. We're here to help. This also can happen on the smallest side, and that we do have a tech touch assist there. On our product team has devised this strategy where it's like, oh, we know that if we can get them to take a test booking, that really hopefully drives home the whole point of what's going on here. And so people have started taking more test bookings at the smallest side and staying more engaged because of that. But we also do send emails to people we're not seeing taking those bookings. And we're saying, hey, you know, have you had any thoughts about your use of us? Would you want to go back and take a test booking? It looks like you're not taking many bookings. Can we help? So it's really a reach out to say, hey, we're here to support you. And it's a kind of a line into our support desk if they want to ask a question about using the product.
We're already way into the episode and there's still so many questions left. But one, the most important one is probably hiring in the area of customer success. So what are the smallest steps starting from doing it yourself to hiring your first person to few people? How does this process work?
I think that out of the questions that I hear most often, this is the number one. And I think for good reason, you know, I think that as I was describing in my intro, that was something I was talking about. It's a newer field. Frankly, it's still, at this point, still a newer field. And I think people are still figuring out what exactly does this mean? I think we established that proactive versus reactive. But when it comes down to what does it mean for my product? What does it mean for my company? The answer can actually vary quite a bit from product to product and from company to company. And if you're a solo founder, or if you've just got a very small team and you're thinking, ah, I need my first non-technical hire, you may not be thinking about sales anymore. You might be thinking first about success. And that's happening more and more. We're saying, I need someone who maybe can do a lot of different things, maybe keep me a tiny company that does big things, but has a natural depth of talent that would serve well in the long term on the success side. And in that case, there's some characteristics to look for in who you're hiring and some recommendations I have for the actual interview. And the characteristics, I think it's no shocker to me that so many people who thrive in this realm, myself included, come from a journalism background or from some kind of background where they're really comfortable with listening and building trust and relationships. When it comes to retention and expansion, there was an example someone told me recently about. They are not anywhere near the customer success world or even the software world. They sell sprinkler systems. And they sell specifically to, I think, lawn care companies, just these systems. And the head of one of their companies is one of their customers they were trying to expand. And they knew that this person was really into paintball. And so they're like, they got them a paintball gun. It's just out of the blue. They're just like, here's a paintball gun. And down the road, they ended up buying, I think, 10 times the more systems from this company than they had in the past. It's like, you know what that is? It's a relationship. And what it does transfer over, it's a different industry, but it transfers over to software that when you're looking for someone who's going to thrive and really pay off dividends in the long term in your company, when you're hiring, it's someone who does relationships really, really well and asks really good questions and listens really well. And a lot of that does come from that more traditional journalism interview style background, where you are able to understand what someone's telling you, you remove your bias, you can really hear what they're saying, and you can say, this is the priority for this person, and I'm going to keep coming back to that as my number one. And I think that I have been on the receiving end of some really difficult customer success relationships where I've been the customer. And the worst case is when that CSM is following a playbook of what they're supposed to be asking me and selling me, and they don't really remember anything about what I actually need. And they've asked the questions and nothing ever really comes of it in future conversations, as if it's Groundhog Day over and over again. And it's so deeply frustrating. So what you're looking for in your hire is someone who's the opposite of that. And in the interview, I think one thing you can start to look for, this is very non-traditional approach, is maybe even prep that interviewee and say, hey, in this conversation, there's going to be a part of this where you are going to interview me. And you're really looking for their ability to ask good questions and to listen to what you're saying. And I think that is critically, vitally important. It cannot be overlooked. You know, I think there's some persistence involved as well. You know, we talked about the difference between success support, reactive, proactive. You have to have somebody who's willing to put themselves out there, who maybe in that hiring process goes the extra mile, who maybe even reached out to you before you knew you needed a customer success team and just said, hey, Joe, hey, Jane, here I am. Maybe you want to talk about customer success. That person who puts themselves out there and really goes for something that maybe you didn't even ask for, because that's going to pay off down the line when they're developing your customers as well. So those kinds of traits, I think, are something that is vitally important to pay attention to when you're hiring someone who's not waiting for things to come to them, who is reaching out for those things, those opportunities, kind of in the sales mindset, but very different. They're not coming in saying, aha, I have got the thing for you. They're coming in and saying, I'm listening to what you're telling me and what you need, and I'm making sure that we're going to meet those needs in a consultative way.
These are some great insights. And also, if there are some people listening to us who'd like to start a career in customer success, well, you just described the key qualities, but maybe some more resources where they can get themselves sort of educated and get started on this.
Absolutely. So one thing that's really helpful in this is to plug into the thinkers that are currently really developing this field. And as you explore this and you're interested in this world, one thing you're going to find is pretty much all of the published thinking right now is at this highest level, biggest scale environment where you have these very formal customer success organizations. And if you're somebody who's really eager to get started at a small scale, smaller SaaS, you're going to find principles that are helpful, but you're also going to be told this model that is much more enterprisey. And that's fine, but you're going to have to figure out how to connect with those smaller scale single founders who might be looking for help. One great way is conferences. If you're going to startup conferences where you've got folks who are just starting out on their journey, building relationships with those folks is really great, but you're also still at the same time going to have to educate yourself about what really works here. And a lot of times people will start in the support side and they'll kind of level up and go into the success side as they mature into their career. But personally, one thing that I found to be really helpful in my thinking is a particular book called The Customer Success Professionals Handbook. And this just recently, I think it came out this year. And we're starting to see more formalized ways of thinking about a system for customer success that actually could transfer not just to enterprise, but to the small scale companies as well. I highly recommend it. That I think it was published by Wiley. It's on my bookshelf. I'm looking at it right now. And that just gives you a nice framework for thinking, you know, I might be the first customer success hire. How could I help a founder think about building a framework for the long term for this company?
Do you think this could be a part-time opportunity, so one customer success person can be working across a couple of startups, let's say?
It's possible. I think that it's certainly possible. You might hear the hesitation in my voice.
Yes, I do.
That it's certainly not the path I would take. And the reason is there's a deep demand when you're entering into, let's say you're looking to fill a need for a particular company, and they're just getting started. You can consult with them, but your ability to really know their customers and help build the process is so limited if you're doing this across multiple companies. Because what you're actually trying to do with customer success is getting into the structure of how the company works. The structure of how the company works in terms of how everything interacts together from sales to success to support, kind of like how we talked about at You Can Book Me. That's what's going to be required at these smaller scale companies. And if you're thinking about this from one company to another, what you'll find is the journey is different for each of these. The aha moments are different. The customers are all different. And if you can find a particular niche and you can find some commonalities across all of those, I think that might be the best way of going about it. But still, I think you're going to see the best results and the most rewarding long-term path for kind of seeing those success booms in expansion and retention if you can dig in to the actual system that's happening in an ecosystem for an individual company. I think there's a lot of unique parts of that. I think that I might be showing my bias here. I could be very wrong, but that's kind of the perspective I have on it. I haven't taken the approach of the consultant route, although I've thought about it in the past. I've been approached about it in the past. And each time I thought, you know, I've been able to see so much more satisfying change and meaningful interactions with a customer base from one single company that I imagine I'd be able to do as a consultant for multiple. So again, I might be revealing my bias. This perspective is purely my own without a lot of like qualitative research to back that up, but that's definitely my very strong feeling on it.
Thank you for sharing that. I also imagine you're probably expending so much energy on customer relationships that juggling clients would also like take the remaining energy. What would be left then?
Oh, I think that's a great point. Drain. I mean, it is, we talk about the best elements here. And I think the notes we keep hitting are relationships. And relationships, frankly, they're expensive. They really are. And we all know when we're getting the cheap version of a relationship. And I think that if you can figure out a way to do this across multiple clients, then my hat goes off to you. And I'd love to hear how you're doing it.
A founder listening to us doesn't have resources or time to do proactive outreach. What kind of customer success ideas can they inject in their support conversations? Maybe they get on a demo call. What can they do to become a customer success advocate in these conversations?
Yeah, so let's talk first about support, and then we'll talk about demos. In support, there's a model that I've learned from Help Scout, the Yes And model that I have, by the way, if anyone here is using Help Scout, we're big Help Scout fans that you can book me. If you're not using them, they actually have some really great education, even for people who aren't using their product, that can really help you think about good support. And they have infused in their whole company this mindset of what they call support-driven growth. And I think about that, I was like, ah, what they're really saying is they have found a way to, in their support conversations, make it proactive. It is reactive, proactive. They use this model again called yes and. Someone comes in with a problem and the person who's answering the ticket, by the way, I believe Help Scout, they all do support in that company. I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong. But the person who's answering the ticket is going to help the user solve the problem and then take the time to look at the account, poke around, maybe check out some of the stuff they're doing in their account and say, and by the way, I would love to show you this one thing that might help you in your use. So the answer that the user was looking for, that's in the ticket. And then this thing that they may not even thought about is also in the ticket, this consultative, micro consultative. It's a beautiful concept. If you commit to it, I think that you can see some really powerful results. To get there, you obviously need to have people on the support side who are not simply seeing their role as reactive. There has to be a mindset shift of the people who are doing support tickets to also this yes and model. And that has to be a solid commitment for those support people. On the demo side, something you brought up, Jane, I think is actually really interesting for success is that this qualification of really listening in a consultative way in a demo is the best way to start off a relationship in terms of a success relationship with even a prospect. Because what you were talking about is like, you were very happy and eager to say, hey, you know, I'm hearing what you're needing from a tool that sends email and user list does this. But what I'm hearing is you actually might need this. That's not what our depth is in. And you're saying, I am very happy to send somebody off to a tool that's going to enable their success even more than ours. And what you're doing on the flip side of that is hearing exactly the person that you want and need and say, we can definitely, certainly solve that problem for you. Here's how we're going to do it. Building the plan on the demo, especially if you anticipate they're going to be high volume use and following through on that plan in some kind of onboarding flow, whether it's tech touch and your plan is simply laying out your tech touch interactions, or whether it's high touch and you're saying, hey, I know we can meet your need long term. We're going to engage in a much more one-to-one interaction with you because I see the value being so high for us on our side. So yeah, I think in both cases, I think that even on the support side and in the sales side, success should be imbued in those interactions. I mean, let's think about it this way. One of the most prized commodities, in my view, at a SaaS company is the time that you can spend speaking with a user or a customer. And a demo is part of that. Support is part of that. Don't waste it. Don't waste it.
Absolutely. Let's scratch the surface of the help docs topic. We absolutely cannot dive it in depth, but who do you think should be responsible for building those? And in general, what's your best advice for how to just wrap your brain about building ones?
You need somebody who's a good communicator, really good communicator, and written communicator. This is not the place where you're saying, oh, the most available person is going to be doing this. No. If you are the best written communicator on your team, then it might need to be you. If you're not interested in being the person who's writing support docs and you don't have a better alternative, you might want to look for that as a trait in your next hire. Someone who's excellent, exceptional at writing support docs, writing in any context. At You Can Book Me, we are super fortunate to have excellent written communicators. So it is not me personally who's writing these docs. However, I do think that whoever is responsible really does need regular management from someone who's saying, hey, I know you're giving this your full attention, but I'm here also just to make sure that we've got everything we need in our docs. For us, it's spread out a little bit. We have one person responsible for writing them, but we actually have a Slack channel where anybody in the company can say, hey, I noticed we might need a little bit more here, just leaving it as, and I think we have the title of the channel being KB Docs Needs. So we call it knowledge-based docs needs. And so anybody in the company can just leave, hey, you know, this is something that we want to improve on for whenever it can be done, instead of like a ticketing system to get this, it's just in Slack. But I think that it's important to have somebody owning it and having it be part of their performance that you're grading, and that person needing to be A+ at their written communication. And another thing I think it's really easy for us to do in our knowledge base or support docs is to talk about features. And I think this is easy to do in our demos. It's easy for us to do in our support interactions. And it's something that it's not terrible, but it's much, much better to talk about what the user is looking for. Just thinking about it from their language and from the thing that they're trying to do, the job they're trying to do. And so one way you can reflect this in your support docs is to think about the categorization really strategically and consider how these support docs should be categorized based on how the user might be interacting and what things that they're thinking about they're trying to do, rather than the features or how you've laid out the settings menu in your app. Another way that you can really tackle this in a more intuitive way is having people who are doing support in your company, projects that they can engage in that aren't just support, can be where they're collecting natural language that's being used by the user to describe what they're trying to do and matching that up with the way you talk about the feature. So for example, let's say that somebody's talking about taking bookings on their calendar, and the You Can Book Me term is a booking page, but the user is talking about a calendar. One thing that you can do is you can say, well, do my docs allow me to use keywords? What if I started typing that keyword in the section of that doc? So when people start searching for this in docs, looking for the word they're using, it actually gives them the result they're looking for, or maybe even going a step further and revising the language you're using in your docs and your support interactions to reflect that of what most users would be using. So there's a few ways of tackling this, but I think that the number one important thing is that there's ownership. There's somebody who knows it's their job, and two, that that person is an excellent written communicator.
Thanks so much, Anna. I think we need to wrap this up, but this has been so helpful. Where can people find you and your company online so that they can learn more?
Absolutely. You can find my company, You Can Book Me, youcanbook.me. We are a scheduling tool that really focuses on leveraging scheduling for teams. So teams of any size, we love serving teams. Of course, if you're looking for one-to-one, we help with that as well. And if you are coming in at a larger scale, you can expect a really fun and exciting customer success experience with an account manager, as we've been talking about. And then to reach me personally, I am on Twitter. You can DM me. I love getting DMs on Twitter. And then I also have a website, annajacobson.com, and you can reach me there as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom. And I hope we hear more thought leadership from you on the topic in future.
Well, thanks so much, Jane. It was great to be here.